Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, Monday edition. It's a rare Monday edition of the Pick Six Podcast. We decided to wait through the weekend so that we could get the latest schedule for Husker football. I'm Sam McEwen on, along with Evan Bland. Evan, you have changed your background. Technically, the previous background might have been more accurate. But tell us why you've changed your background.
You know, I'm just going for the metaphors. And previously it was like, it was winter. It was an empty stadium. Nothing was happening. With the restart of Big Ten football, man, what better time to, you know, celebrate with some balloons up into the air for the proverbial touchdown, as it were. Yeah, we know the crowds won't be there this year, but I think it captures the spirit of this moment.
It does. It does. And you know what? I still think there might be some crowds late in the season. We're going to have to find out. You know, I think there's some ways maybe to get creative with that. They're going to see, I think they're going to have a whole month's worth of data from SEC, ACC, Big 12, and a few NFL teams that are including fans. I know the Cowboys had fans. I think the Jags had fans. I think the Kansas City Chiefs had some fans. And so maybe what they'll learn through that process is maybe they can have a few fans in the stadium. I talked to John Niatawa, who covers Union Omaha, the soccer team. And of course, Union Omaha has fans, and they haven't had a case yet that's been traced to what happened at Warner Park, which is that, you know, it's proof that if you do things the right way and you mask up and you're safe and you do all the things you're supposed to do, you can in fact, you know, get this kind of thing done. And so we're going to keep applauding the health folks, not only for the developments in antigen testing that helped bring the Big Ten football season back, but also their planning, just an overall processing. It isn't perfect. Science evolves. It takes time. But, it's, you know, for the most part, it's been reasonably good. And so the people are doing their jobs here in Nebraska. A lot to cover here today, a ton. We're going to talk about the schedule first, I think, because that's the appropriate place to start, because that's the latest news. And we'll talk about how that schedule breaks down, how it compares to some of the other teams. We'll talk about why Big Ten football is back and how it got back. I can fill in a few blanks there, although a lot of the blanks have already been filled in. We'll talk a little baseball since they had scrimmage last Thursday, and we'll both talk to the media on Friday. We'll talk a little men's basketball, since we have a pretty good clarity on when, generally when the basketball season can start. Nebraska is going to have potentially a commit today from a 2021 port guard named Carter Witt, who it's possible that he commits today and then enrolls early. Probably going to roll over to 2021. He's going to be a 2021 guy. So they get that player. That'd be a nice player to get. He's a top 100 recruit. So we'll talk a little bit about that and the roster and a few other things. And then, of course, we'll have picks. We may do a podcast late this week after Scott Frost and players talk, if they talk this week, and then we'll be able to update a little bit of that and talk a little bit more about the roster in general. We'll talk a little bit about handicapping the Big Ten here today, and then we'll do the picks just in case we don't get to them late on Friday. I'm in the lead, by the way, for the first time in like a long time. 8-2 in week one. You went 6-4. Yeah. OMG, I have a lead. I'm going to have to hold on to it. We want to send our condolences to the Frost family after the loss of Larry Frost last week. He was a coach in so many areas in the state of Nebraska, most notably Wood River, where he coached his son, Scott Frost, who was the quarterback. Larry's wife, Carol, was an assistant coach. It's always been a family deal with them. And so they went all over the Midwest and the United States, coaching football together, playing football together. And so this is obviously a very difficult time for the Frost family. If you imagine everything that Scott Frost has had to kind of work through and process through since his return, there's been starts and stoppages in play. You know, with the thunderstorms and whatnot, there's been injuries, there's been other things. And of course, you know, his father was obviously not always doing well. And of course, he he passed away, and that's just another difficult thing for Coach Frost to deal with. He's had a lot to work through, and we wish them the best. Our condolences. We'll be praying for him. I know that one moment that I remember with Larry here in the last couple of years is Scott's parents would often come and watch practice, and we didn't really talk to the parents. I mean, that was their time with Scott. But one time Larry was coming by us, and I said, "Hey, Coach, you know, have a good day." And he looked back and he said, "Well, I'm not a coach anymore." And I said, "Well, you're always a coach." And I think that's the truth. I think when a person coaches for as long as Larry did, you're a coach for life. It just doesn't really go out of your blood. You're always going to be that person who's just people know as coach. So he positively affected generations of people. He was a coach for a long time, and obviously shaped a lot of who Scott Frost is. And so he will be missed, and our condolences to the Frost family. We want to remind everybody that our sponsor is the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with four licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RV, off-road vehicles. You better get in your big boy toy action now, because football season in Nebraska starts on October 24th. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Dara Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossack, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free new obligation insurance reviews and quotes. They got to make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can reach the Schwalbach Agency at 402-590-5200, 402-590-5200. Thanks to Team Schwalbach. Okay, so the Nebraska football schedule comes out Saturday morning, Evan. I'm sure you were watching there on Big Fox. Kudos to Fox on some level for starting the show with the first game on the schedule. They bled it out over an hour, but they did a pretty good job of at least having the first game. So let's just get your initial reaction in that first hour to the schedule unveiling and what you thought of Nebraska's slate, and then maybe what you thought of Nebraska's reactions both on social media with fans and Athletic Director Bill Moose.
Yeah, I thought the way that Fox presented it was smart. You know, they did milk it out, like you said, week one, week two, on down the list. You know, I wasn't shocked by the schedule at large. Like, I pretty much anticipated that it would be Ohio State on the road, Penn State at home as the two crossover games. Yes, Rutgers was that third crossover game on the original schedule. But it wasn't a shock. That wasn't part of this deal. And then obviously you have your six divisional games. The only notable part of that to me was that Purdue was on the road for a second straight year, and Wisconsin's in Lincoln for a second straight year. That was part of their reset there. You know, I guess I just didn't get worked up the way that a lot of fans and other maybe media pundits did. Like, I just figured that this was the schedule that was going to come. And I was curious. I went back and looked. You know, the original 2020 schedule came out in September of 2017. Mm-hmm. So this is not a case of the Big Ten, you know, exacting revenge or laying down the gauntlet on Nebraska for what it did. This was a very similar schedule to the original version. And so if you want to, I guess, take issue with anything, maybe it's that it's front loaded, I guess.
Right.
But I just didn't feel like it was that big a deal. But certainly, you know, you can think abstractly and think the schedule will be the same. But when you see it on paper, yeah, I mean, it is a darn difficult schedule, right? Ohio State, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Penn State is the first half of your 8-game season. I mean, that's very front loaded. I guess I felt like if you're going to play that kind of a gauntlet, the front half of the season makes a lot of sense for that. Everyone's going to be healthy. And I still feel like Nebraska has an advantage in some areas, given the experience it has at certain positions, given the way it's approached this off season, where it's always planned on playing at some point this fall. So I feel like in a lot of ways, things set up well for Nebraska to make a move. You know, worst case, they stumble, and it's a weird 8-game pandemic season anyway, that's not going to have, I don't feel like, lasting effects for years on the program, but you win some of these games, and that can change the perception in a positive way. So I guess I was totally fine with the schedule from Nebraska's perspective. I felt like you know, it really wasn't worth complaining about. It wasn't worth blaming the Big Ten for anything. And if they do well, this is the sort of thing that can catapult them into 2021, I feel like.
Yeah, you know, I the comments that I got from Bill Moose were not, I wouldn't describe them as surprising. People have to understand that as the athletic director at Nebraska, Bill Moose's job in those Big Ten meetings and with us to some degree is to reflect, you know, the program's psyche to some degree, and also to fight for his head coach. I think that one thing I would say was very true about multiple previous administrations is there wasn't always a, you know, in-step philosophy with coach and AD. So, you know, back in 03, there wasn't really an unstep philosophy with Steve Peterson and Frank Solich. I think Bill Callahan and Steve Peterson were in sync. But obviously when Steve Peterson was fired, there wasn't going to be a lot of simpatico between Callahan and Osborne. I think with Osborne and Pelini, there was an understanding there, but I'm not sure that Bo at that particular time in his career really understood what it meant to represent a university of the size of Nebraska. And so I think Osborne, even with his incredible stature, could not necessarily quell that sort of fiery anger that Pelini had. When Osborne retired, obviously Sean Eichhorst and Bo Pelini did not sync up. We all know what Pelini called Eichhorst and what he thought of Eichhorst. Eichhorst and Riley, I thought, sought a synced up pretty well, but, you know, that didn't last very long. That only got about 2.5 seasons in, and then Eichhorst was fired. And, you know, and then Riley had no particular chance of keeping his job unless he had run the table and he didn't do it. And so, you know, with Bill Moose and Scott Frost, I think there's always been an understanding that Moose is going to be the guy that just sort of plays the, you know, he plays that role of fighting for his coach, and he's also playing to the audience. And I think he has actually a pretty good understanding of the clientele in Nebraska. That isn't to say that I agree per se with everything that he said, or that I think, you know, the gosh darn it kind of angle is necessarily 100% right. I can understand why they're frustrated with opening with Ohio State. I understand that there is a big difference between opening with Ohio State and opening with Rutgers, which is who they were going to open with if they had, played the second schedule. Now, the second schedule set up kind of beautifully, and you didn't hear any complaints from Nebraska on the second schedule. That's because they started at Rutgers, Illinois, and that was just fine with everybody involved, I think. And I think their third game was Iowa, right? Or was it Wisconsin? I think it was Wisconsin, right?
Yeah. Yep, it was Wisconsin too.
So they had no problem with the first schedule. The first schedule, I think, was pretty well balanced. And Ohio State was in the middle of the season, and they were going to get their butts kicked against Ohio State in the middle of the season. But I think they felt better about it. When you open against Ohio State, two things obviously, you know, come to be in my mind. The first thing is, well, shit, this is going to be a hard game to win. So how do you prepare your team mentally for you're going to play a team that's going to be like a house on fire because Ohio State is going to try to win every game by 60 points so they can make the college football playoff. They won't show much mercy. They may show a little mercy to Nebraska, but they won't show a lot. And so, like, how do you process that Ohio State's going to be really motivated. The game's on the road, which is, you know, different than having it at home. Although I don't know that you want to burn a home game on Ohio State. you know, how do you approach that game? You're like, do we empty the kitchen sink? Do we feel it out for a quarter and see if we're in it and then start thinking about the kitchen sink? Do we go in and play our base stuff so that Wisconsin and Penn State and Northwestern, they don't see that stuff? Like, there's a challenge to playing Ohio State right out of the gate when you don't feel like you have a team that's maybe of Ohio State's caliber. This isn't 1988 and Nebraska playing Texas A&M in the kickoff classic. This isn't 1983 and Nebraska's playing Penn State in the kickoff classic. this isn't one of those years in the 70s where they start off with a big game right out of the chute. I think one year they might have played LSU right away. They played Alabama in week two one year, I think. This isn't that. This Nebraska team doesn't have quite the whatever that those teams had. And so it's a little bit more challenging. And I understand why they're frustrated with that. And why they're like, you know, it would have been nice to have had a game in that first game where we're thinking about how do we win this game and not how much do we put into trying to win this game? Because we know that if we get behind 20, like Ohio State runs the ball the way they want to, it's going to be hard to beat them. And Ohio State can run the hell out of the ball. After that, I completely agree with you, Evan. I think the schedule is more manageable than fans may imagine. The reason I say that is I don't think it's a bad thing to get Wisconsin early. I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think Nebraska's fared well when they've played Wisconsin late, to be very honest. I think when you play a team like Wisconsin late in the season and you're beat up, you actually stand a lesser chance of holding up. Remember that in the third to last game last year, Nebraska plays Wisconsin. They lose 37-21. They played pretty well on offense. They play that game without a real kickoff artist. They play that game without Carlos Davis, without Darian Daniels, without Wandale Robinson. They played that game without all of those guys. If they had all those guys, they might have won that game. And I'm not kidding about that. They might have. But they didn't have them. And so I think it's probably good to try to play a team like Wisconsin when you're healthy and they're still learning. There's no secret about that program. They're not going to come out with some goofy new quarterback. It's going to be Jack Cohn doing Jack Cohn things. And Wisconsin will run the ball, and they won't have Jonathan Taylor. They'll play their defense. They're not going to be screwy. I think that's the best possible chance you have against Wisconsin. The game at Northwestern, you just need to go win. And then Penn State. And I'm just telling you, that I don't look at that Penn State. I think people were more pissed off that Penn State was the other crossover opponent than they were about Ohio State. It's almost like people expected Ohio State, but they wanted some other team other than Penn State. And that's just the vibe I got from fans. Moose wanted to start over entirely, but the vibe I got from fans was that it was – and I'm just telling you, they can beat Penn State. They can. I think Penn State lost a lot in the offseason. They lost a lot of good players. Four of them were drafted into the NFL, but the other guys transferred out. And Penn State is not a great road team. They're not. They're good, but they're not great, and they're not unbeatable. They're going to be coming off a goofy start to the season. They play at Indiana to start. I think that's going to be a tough game. Then they host Ohio State in week two. And I don't think they're going to win that. And then they play Maryland, which they should beat. And then they come to Nebraska. And, I just don't think that game needs to be viewed on the same level as Ohio State. I feel like the gap between those two programs is bigger than people might imagine. And so I think people are overreacting a little bit to the difficulty of that game. I think by the time Penn State rolls into Nebraska, they're going to be 2-1 at best. And I'm telling you, watch that season opener against Indiana. I don't think it's going to be a walk. I just don't. I think Indiana's got good players. It's probably the best team they've had in a long time. They have probably as good of a quarterback. Michael Penix gets hurt all the time, but he will be healthy for that game because it's the first one. And so I just don't think it's going to be as easy as people envision. Or Penn State will not roll over Nebraska. I just don't think that'll happen. I think Frost understands Penn State's offense. He worked with James Franklin. I think he's friends with James Franklin. I don't think they're going to be outcoached in that game. I think Penn State uses an offensive coordinator who was at Minnesota last year. It's just going to be a more familiar contest than people give it credit for. So that piece, I think the Ohio State game to start off the season is a stinker. That's tough. I think they're gonna come out like a house on fire. After that, I think you can navigate it. I would say that I don't like that late in the season, that road game at Purdue. I think that should concern people. On December 12th, it's cold as F, and you just played at Iowa, playing at Purdue on December 5th. Sorry. It's December 5th. It's cold. You just played at Iowa. I don't like that game. I think that game's going to be tough. And you got to find a way to go out and beat Purdue on that day. But I actually like what the Iowa game sets up as. Iowa's coming off two big games. I have to look at their schedule here, Evan. But when Nebraska plays Iowa, if I'm not mistaken here, let me take a look. Iowa's coming off of back-to-back games at Penn State and Minnesota. And that's going to take a toll on them. You play Minnesota and Penn State in back-to-back weeks. You come back home on potentially a short week for a Black Friday game. I'll take advantage of Nebraska. I'm serious. Like, I think that's advantage of Nebraska. Because Nebraska plays back-to-back Penn State at home and then Illinois, and then they go to Iowa. I like Nebraska in that setting. I do. So, you know, the thing I don't like is the very first game. I think that's a very hard setup for Nebraska. And then that road game at Purdue, I think is a bear and a half, because it's going to be cold and miserable. And that stadium has always got mucky turf, and it'll be all chewed up. And I think that's Purdue's senior day, and it just won't be a pleasant experience. And Nebraska will have to find a way to mush through it and survive it in what will likely be hideous weather. It could be, you know, 14 degrees. It could be the worst kind of weather is 27 and rainy, and it could be that. But I think they can navigate it otherwise. And I think they've got a stronger team than fans maybe give them credit for. It just may not look pretty in game one.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then think about Nebraska hosting a game in December 12th against Minnesota. How bizarre is that? I mean, that's just, who knows what the weather will be like that day.
Well, you'd hope it won't be wet at the very least. The deal with Purdue is it's close enough to that lake to where the you know, the moisture drips down, and you can either have a lake effect rain or a snow. And that's just gross. At least in Nebraska, you hope that it's cold as hell, and the wind's blowing, but it's dry, you know, and you know you can at least plan that. You I think you probably know this, having lived your whole life in Nebraska. A wet cold is worse than a dry cold. It's just that wet cold makes you sick.
It gets inside you, no doubt about it.
Oh yeah. So that's the game I worry about on the schedule. That one in Ohio State. I think everything in between that is actually quite manageable, and Purdue is manageable too. But I think a lot of it's more manageable than people give it credit for. You have to play Wisconsin no matter what. You might as well play them early, even if it's in week two after Ohio State.
I agree. Yeah, be healthy. Like you said, you know what they offer, so there's no element of surprise that comes into play there. It's the type of team that just wears you down. So I guess depending on what happens against Ohio State, Nebraska should be full strength to go in that one, you would think. And again, I keep going back to this idea that all these teams had shortened or no spring ball at all. They got in, a few days of unpadded practice in August before the Big Ten shut things down. They've had 12 hours a week for the last month or so, in which who knows the varying degrees to which they've really invested in that, thinking they might play this fall. And so now they'll have, 3 weeks or so once they start padded practices September 30th to get rolling. And so I continually look at, hey, Nebraska could roll out all five O-line starters from last year. They have a third-year starting quarterback. The secondary is deep and is a veteran unit. So, like, I just feel like the parts of football that require players to be in sync, that really most value experience, Nebraska's got advantages in those areas. Like, do they totally need to reset at receiver? Yeah. Do they have any idea what's going on special teams? No, they need to work through those things. But I feel like a lot of the areas relative to its opponents, more than any other year, that experience, I just feel like it's going to make a difference in some of these games too.
I would think the pitch and catch aspect of Nebraska is probably a little further along. In part because if there's a thing that you can do without pads, it's you can do the 7-on-7 pitch and catch stuff, and you can work on timing, and you can work on chemistry. All that stuff comes with, you can do all that stuff without pads. And if you were going to say, you know, what was an issue last year with Nebraska? Well, I'd say chemistry on the passing and catching it. Mm-hmm. That Martinez, you know, A, he liked Cade Warner, and he didn't have Cade Warner for a good chunk of the season. B, he could not consistently, I think, trust a couple of the receivers who have now left, and those were the senior guys, Woodyard and Williams. Didn't know Kanavainoa very well. Probably knows Omar Manning better at this point because Manning's been around longer than Noah was before they played a game. So – There's aspects of this program that I think are, you know, at least in that area, are a little bit ahead. Now the physicality piece is a different thing. And have you watched much football the last couple weeks, college wise?
A little bit. It's been hard to get into too much, but it's been sloppy. I mean, I watched Oklahoma State
kind of. Yeah, physicality is a problem.
Yeah, it's been tough.
What's interesting is the NFL has not had that issue. It gives you a sense of how professional and how elite these guys are that I've watched the first 2 weeks of NFL and actually the hitting's been good. The tackling's been good. The play's been a little cleaner, a little less sloppy, and most guys aren't hurt. Now, some guys got hurt in week two.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Stuff that usually happens in preseason is going to start happening now. Because their sea legs aren't under them and they're playing these physical full contact games. Saquon Barkley obviously out with an ACL tear, but the NFL's hitting's been good. In college, yeah, I haven't, you know, it took Navy a full game and a half to start playing Navy football. They still didn't look right in the first half of a game they played against, I can't even remember now, Tulane. And then the second half, they finally started playing their game, and that's, you know, that option football, and they won. Haven't seen a lot of teams that just looked on point. Miami has looked pretty good. Defensively, Miami's looked very good. So Miami kind of came out and they look ready physically. You know, they're playing a Louisville team that doesn't play much defense, but you know, Miami looks pretty good. They look like a pretty legit program, and maybe a few other teams I've watched, but Oklahoma State look like trash. I mean, they're playing Tulsa. And they can't run the ball on Tulsa. That's not good. I think Kansas State will play a lot better this week, even though they're playing Oklahoma. I think Iowa State's going to play better, even though they're playing TCU. I think you're going to see some better football. Nebraska's just going to have to live with the fact that out of the gate, they're going to get the biggest physical test of the season because Ohio State's a bigger and better team than Wisconsin. Their offensive line is the best line in the country. Their defensive line, I think, will be pretty good. Their linebackers are very good. Their secondary's pretty good. And their skill is good. They won't have as good a skill as they had last year. Now, they lost J.K. Dobbins, and they lost some really good receivers. Now, it's not that easy to just always replace people and have them be good in the first game. So, you know, but the one thing I think Ohio State can hang its hat on is, F you, we're going to run the ball. Stop it. Good luck. And Nebraska couldn't do that last year, you know. What was the second drive of the game? The center, Josh Myers, I think, launched Muhammad Berry about 6 yards in the air on a power play. It was the same play where Khalil Davis, I think, hit Myers and got a penalty. But I was like, this game's not going to go well. Because when that happens, when the physical advantage is that significant, you know, you don't have to worry about throwing it. You can just bully a team down the field. And they did. And that's something Nebraska is going to have to, their physical challenge is going to, they're going to have to stand up to it. They're going to have to be ready for it.
It's going to be interesting because we've seen all the offseason work that they've done. And you know, you see guys like Cam Jurgens and Ty Robinson and guys like, whoa, you know, they've made some real physical gains. And then you kind of counter that with this idea that, you know, Nebraska will have gone 10 months without being in pads at all until it starts September 30th to be able to do that. It will have gone pretty much 11 full months since it's played any kind of live action, you know, padded game. When you go from Black Friday against Iowa last year to Ohio State in the opener. So my goodness, like, how, if you're the coaching staff, how do you approach that? I think that'll be fascinating if you try to get in some work to ramp up for that, or if you hold back and try to save your body, I guess, for the games. But it's going to be really interesting to see what that transition's like, because if you're in the midst of a football career, high school, college, like, you never go 10 months without being in pads. So really right. Unusual situation. It's going to be fascinating to see how that translates to the field.
Do you have an initial, we'll do this later on officially, but do you have an initial prediction?
Like season record prediction?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, at first blush, 4-4 kind of sounds about right to me. But yeah, we can get into that a little bit later too. How about you?
Yeah, I'd say first blush 4-4, maybe 5-3. I think the swing game is probably going to be Wisconsin or Penn State. If they win one of those two, and I think they can, then I think they can go 5-3. And if they go 5-3, they're going to be ranked, I suspect. So people have to take a little more heart. Like, you can't judge it by that first game. You can't. And Nebraska internally can't judge it. And I don't know how they're going to handle it. They're probably not going to tell us definitively how they're going to handle it. But how you handle that first game, do you just say, hey, man, we know we're going against a great team. We got to flush this thing fast. And if we lose by 14, we got to take heart. We can't sit there and get down on ourselves or whatever. We got to move on and play some stinking football. What you don't want to do is go in there and lose, you know, big. So you got to find a way to fight and claw, and, you know, maybe you can pull out a win, but if you can't, you come out of there with some dignity and some hard-earned toughness. If they do that, I think they can go 5-3.
Yeah, I think the other thing that goes into the prognosticating is, how do you value a home game versus a road game when there are no fans? Like, right. Playing it in the Horseshoe is tough. How much easier, if at all, is it when it's empty? You know, if Minnesota's coming to Memorial Stadium, how much different is that in an empty Memorial Stadium as opposed to having the sea of red there? Like, I think that'll be fascinating across the board, just to see how much that affects things. How much do fans play into that, and how much is it just the fact that it's that one team has to travel and that it's an unfamiliar venue and routine and all that? So I think that's something else that adds some intrigue to this particular season.
I agree. I mean, we'll get deeper into the team as we go on. I just my initial reaction was, Ohio State, man, that's tough to start, but you can manage the other games. And that where they get Penn State isn't a bad spot to get them. I'm just saying. I'll take Penn State where you're getting them, and I think Nebraska can beat Penn State. That's not the same program as Ohio State, and people have to remember that. And I study this crap for a living, okay? So, like, I do the polls and all that stuff, so I watch all of these teams. There isn't any team in the league like Ohio State. They don't exist. They're not on a map. That's the best team. Wisconsin isn't nearly as good. Good, but not nearly as good. Penn State, good, but not nearly as good. Minnesota, good, not as good as Penn State and Wisconsin. Like, you have to put teams in their proper context. And Ohio State last year is the best college football team I've seen in a long time. They screwed up and lost to Clemson in the whatever. But Ohio State's team last year was one of the best teams I've ever seen. So people kind of keep it in context. Big Ten football is back, though, and I think that makes everybody happy. The thing that I think is most important about that conversation, We can talk more about the politics of it, but Evan, you did what I considered to be the most important story. You and Julie Anderson, who wrote a story in the Sunday World Herald, and if anybody hasn't read it, they should, about how antigen tests work and why there's some advantages to doing it this way. But I thought your story on the testing protocols and the stringency that will be in place is very important. Do you want to unpack maybe the two or three key things that fans need to understand about the testing protocols and how that's going to play out?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly as the Big Ten Return to Competition Task Force laid out and pretty much everyone associated with the league has said, it has been the reason that it is now unanimous to play and not 11-3 to not play is because of the availability of rapid result on-site antigen testing. And so I think most notably, you look back on what was the protocol August 5th when that 10-game league-only schedule came out. It was two tests per week of the PCR variety. So, you know, you're testing maybe Wednesday, Saturday, or something like that, twice a week. You might not get the results for 24 hours. They have to be sent to a lab. Each team might get those results at different times, depending on how close a lab may be. So it was pretty much impossible to do any reliable contact tracing to take any kind of preventative measures, really. And so you contrast that with what the policy is now, which is every single day they have to take these tests, which they'll get back in like 15 minutes. They're more effective to the point to where the Chicago Tribune quoted somebody, Northwestern's lead physician, saying they can detect the virus to the point below infectivity. So they could actually take a positive test before that player becomes contagious. And so it's just vastly different. So you're talking every day, able to contact trace, not all that expensive, you know, relatively speaking, considering what you're getting out of it. So, you know, that's a big piece. Obviously it's a high standard because if you do test positive as a player, you're out 21 days. So three games, essentially. That 14-day window is pretty much consistent with CDC recommendations and what you see elsewhere. And then the Big Ten kind of laid out that they went an additional seven to establish guidelines as players kind of ramp up activity and return to it. So they don't feel like the 21 days is all about the virus or infection rate. It's about allowing that player to return. So, you know, that's a big deal too. And then they've established kind of these team positivity rates and population positivity rates. The former essentially says, you know, we're going to test you every day. And if you have a certain percentage, then you can't practice. And so for Nebraska, for example, it's 154 listed players on their roster. If they have eight players in any given day test positive, they can't play a game that week. That would be what they would call a red, you know, a red definition or an unacceptable level of positivity. And then population rate, that's more related to this idea of how many active cases are there on the team at one time. So maybe someone tests positive on a Monday, someone else tests positive on a Tuesday. There's a 7-day rolling average there. So just because it's important to remember that just because there is a schedule now, it doesn't mean these games are a given, because the Big Ten's standard in this, which by the way was extremely important in getting that unanimous vote to restart, is higher than anywhere else in college football right now. And so if you get those kind of positivity rates, you are going to see cancellations. And so that's going to be a big deal moving forward. And that's also the antigen testing is also the reason that the Big Ten isn't starting play on the 17th of October. They wanted another week to make sure everybody was in place with that. So that's high priority for the Big Ten, was getting that in place and getting that rolling before they even considered returning to football.
So my understanding of the September 30th piece is that's when they feel like they're going to have the tests in place.
Right.
In other words, it's taking them some time to secure them, because today is September 21st. You know, you hope that they're able to secure those antigen tests as quickly as possible and deliver those to each team in the league. That's going to cost quite a bit of money, and the Big Ten's going to purchase those. What we don't know and may never know is whether or not the White House, Trump administration, was willing to give the Big Ten thousands of tests out of its own stockpile. Remember, it has purchased Abbott tests for a federal stockpile of 150 million. And it's what's not known is whether those were offered to the Big Ten cost-free, because obviously the White House is buying them. The federal government is buying $700 million worth of tests. What we don't know is whether the Big Ten was offered any of those tests. And once you purchase the tests, the whole idea is that you give them out. So I don't know if the Big Ten would have had to pay for them or not. But the bottom line is the Big Ten's going its own way on this, just like the Pac-12 did, just like the Big 12 did. And they're purchasing these tests from somewhere. They haven't said exactly where, but they'll secure the tests and then they'll deliver them. And everybody should have enough to, I guess, suffice for the whole season, testing every single day. So, as to whether that, I don't know exactly how that looks. But there was certainly a political component to last week. We're going to move past that pretty quickly, I suspect. And everybody's going to move on to, you know, focusing on the season. Whether or not it's brought up multiple times on the campaign trail, it very well may be. We'll just have to see. But it would appear that what Nebraska was able to do over the last month and a half or so, along with Ohio State, the pressure from the players and the parents, the lawsuit, the media pressure that was mounting from certain outlets, shaped the nature of the discussions to return. Because as everybody knows, the Rutgers president, just 7 days before Big Ten football came back, was talking as if it wasn't going to come back, and it was. So something definitely shifted in the nature of the conversation. I think obviously antigen testing was part of that, but remember the Pac-12 announced that on September 3rd. And so, it was at that moment that everybody kind of understood, oh boy, there's a chance that this could move. September 1st is the call between the president and Kevin Warren. September 3rd is when the Pac-12 announces its deal. And I think by the following week, things were starting to move in a certain direction. I think they're going to realize that by December, they're going to wish they started on October 17th, because I think there's a chance that a couple of those games in December are so brutally, the weather is so rough that they're going to be shaking their heads. But I do think they're going to be able to get through a season clean, right?
Seems that way. I mean, the big thing too is there are no bye weeks, so there is no flexibility here leading up. I mean, there won't be postponements, right? Like this is a straight through type of deal. December 19th is that championship week between the Big Ten East and West, and then you're going to have your college football playoff, and who knows about a postseason with bowl games or anything like that. But you're not going to have a chance to make anything up, unlike that August 5th schedule that they put out. They had a couple bye weeks for each team strategically put in. So it could be the cold. It could be a team test positive. It'll be really interesting to see. We haven't seen a lot of Power 5 teams have to postpone or cancel, some, but not a lot. Pro sports has done a pretty good job.
Baylor had.
Last month or so. So it does feel like this is very doable and realistic. I think the other important thing is you have a month still to kind of get your house in order if you're a Big Ten program, to quarantine players, get them ready to go, get your rates down now, because again, the standards that the league set does not leave a lot of room for error. So you got to get things going now, and then if they can stay clean, and they should be motivated to do so, it seems pretty likely that they can get a good long season in here, at least 8 games.
No question. The players will be motivated. What can happen is there can be a transmission in an unexpected way. There's a situation where a player's at home. He's in his house and, somebody comes to the house. It could be anybody. It could be a friend. And by God, they got it. And they're inside the player's house for 5 minutes. They're talking. They leave. The player got it. He lives with three other players. Holy crap. Might they get it? All that kind of stuff. That happens. That's just human life. You know, I know that we've had people in our house in the last couple of months. And of course it's crossed my mind of like, oh man, you know, because our daughter has friends and like we've allowed, I think, two of her friends to kind of hang out. And it's like, you know, what are you going to do? Like you, it's a choice that parents have to make of like, how do you, you love your children, you know, they need their friends and they need that human contact and it can't just be over a screen simultaneously. You know, is there a minor risk? Yeah, there is. So I think that's the thing that players probably deal with. I'm sure they're doing everything otherwise, wearing masks where they have to wear masks, et cetera, et cetera. The concern probably is rooted more in that random off the cuff meeting that you just have with somebody. Maybe you're walking to campus and you see somebody you haven't seen in 9 months and they're not wearing a mask and you're not wearing a mask because it's outside. They sneeze and all that stuff. So, but the antigen tests, if you're doing it every day, should capture people before they become contagious. And hopefully that happens. I think Nebraska's earned a lot of credit for bringing this thing back. I think Ohio State deserves some too. It actually deserves a lot because I think Ohio State stepping forward, even if it was out of self-interest, there's a real value to that. I think it Ohio State, even though they are dominating the league, will in the long run improve the league. It will help. It's going to help in the ACC too. Eventually, Clemson's dominance will lift some of those other boats up. Maybe it'll be at Boston College where Jeff Hafley is a coach, and I think he's going to be a hell of a coach. Maybe it'll be, you know, at Virginia, where I think Bronco Mendenhall is a darn good coach. Maybe it'll be some other school. But some other school is going to say, you know, what they're doing, we're going to do. We're going to follow that track, and we're going to get good, and it'll help. And the same things happen in the Big Ten. You know, Minnesota's not screwing around. You may not like P.J. Fleck. You may think that he, you know, everybody agreed. That line was a bunch of PR BS, whatever. But, you know, when Minnesota takes a football field, they're going to play football, and you can't just assume that they're going to lay down. Indiana's the same way. I mean, Tom Allen, that guy's salt of the earth. His teams are tough. They don't have the best players, but they'll fight you. And they did. They fought Nebraska hard, and they beat them. So, you know, I think it's improved the league, and I think where Ohio State is and the desire to play probably – some schools that otherwise would not have lined up behind that idea did and used Ohio State as cover. I think Nebraska deserves the most credit though, because they did it when it was unpopular, which is before Ohio State kind of stood forth. So Nebraska did it right away on August 11th. And they got a lot of crap for it. I hope to have some other media members on this podcast in the next month, just to kind of unpack why they viewed Nebraska the way they did and kind of get their perspective on things, you know, because I think Nebraska fans view it as very political, or these sports writers hate Nebraska because Nebraska's in a conservative state and they wanted football. I think there's some truth to that. I also think there's some truth to, you know, in New Jersey, there's been almost 17,000 deaths. And that's a very different number than Nebraska. Very different. And you have to, you know, you have to appreciate that. I know a lot more people live in New Jersey, but 17,000 is a huge number. And I think people in Rutgers may look at this pandemic very differently, and for decent enough reasons. And I think we have to understand other people's perspectives. I don't understand why the city of Lincoln has one perspective as it relates to the coronavirus pandemic, and the city of Lansing and East Lansing have a different one. I don't understand that. You know, it's interesting. Nebraska is going back to school. Ronnie Green wants the kids in classes. Michigan State doesn't. Why? You know, I'm fascinated by those differences. So football's back though, and I can't say that I'm unhappy about it. Looking forward to the SEC this weekend. I think that's going to be, you know, real deal football, and I'm looking forward to that. That's better to me than Louisiana Tech and UTSA, and no offense to those schools, but I watched Marshall and Appalachian State like 3.5 quarters of that game. And yeah, and I loved watching it because it's football, but it's not the SEC and it's not the Big Ten. And that becomes evident very quickly. You talked to Will Bolt last week, had a good story on him, on their team. Gosh, they are so different than they were just 9 months ago. We talk about Nebraska football and Nebraska men's basketball revamping their rosters, and Nebraska men's basketball has revamped it again, which we'll get to in a minute. But the baseball team is completely different. And dare I say, maybe this is me just being, you know, overly positive, they seem like a better program than they were 9 months ago when they were beginning a season.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And Will Bolt has said it before, and he said it again this week, but if you're going to take any silver lining out of having your season canceled after 15 games, that silver lining is, man, you had some extra time to recruit and to flip that roster to get it to where you wanted it to be. And so they brought in 17 newcomers this offseason. I think roughly half of those were guys that they got to commit after the season shut down. And then they lost, I think, about 10 guys from the roster, of which, you know, you don't ever like to see guys go, but most of those guys were like, okay. I mean, you hadn't really seen much from them in terms of on-field contributions. And so they flipped that around really fast. They've started stacking up recruits in future classes too. But I think the main thing I took from the scrimmage was that extra depth. And, you know, I've often thought back to what a conversation from a couple of years ago when Nebraska was in a regional and they lost that game to Oklahoma State, and they ultimately lost in a couple games. And that's this idea that, you know, you can be a decent team if you have an ace, if you have two or three good hitters. And that's been what Nebraska's been for a long time. They've had one or two good pitchers. They've had some good hitters, but you get down into that last third of the lineup, and you just, it's a constant turnover of trying to find somebody to stick and produce. I mean, I looked at this scrimmage this last week and was like, wow, you know, they have some depth there. They have a lineup plus a few guys that are going to be trying hard to crack this thing. You know, they have a weekend rotation plus a few guys that are going to be fighting for the midweek spots. And it's been a long time since Nebraska's been able to say that. And yeah, part of that is because of the pandemic and because they don't lose any seniors and you're able to bring those guys back. But the guys that they're bringing in too, I mean, you just see upside everywhere. You know, they're bringing in pitchers who maybe they've had some control issues, but they can throw mid-90s. You know, they're bringing in some hitters who, you know, maybe hit 270, but they have a ton of athleticism and they could translate or they could contribute with speed or something else. So like all these guys they're bringing in, you can kind of see how it would start to come together. You know, you saw some freshmen on the scrimmage last week. Bryce Matthews is a kid out of the Houston area. He's going to be a really good infielder. Max Anderson, most people know about him from Millard West, Nebraska's State Gatorade Player of the Year. Cracked a double. He looked really good. You know, they brought in some experience on the mound, guys like Chance Roach from New Mexico State. Cade Povich looks good again. He's going to be a weekend guy. They moved Shea Shaneman from a closer role into a starting spot. He didn't pitch, but he's going to be one of their best players coming in. So it's just, it feels like, excuse me, the staff really is pushing a lot of these buttons in such a way that you have some depth, you have some margin for error in a baseball season when attrition's going to take hold, when slumps take hold. It really feels like they're going to have people to step in whenever they need them.
Mm. Do you anticipate, if you had to pick, you know, an area where you think they have the most strength, of like, this is where they're going to be at relative to the Big Ten, one of the better teams in the Big Ten, where is that?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be most improved on the infield. They've added a number of guys there who should be good. It's tough to say because, again, everyone's able to roll back their seniors again. And so, like, I guess I look at it more from the sense that Nebraska didn't have a ton of infield depth last year. Now they have quite a bit. Their weekend rotation was fairly flawed last year. Now it should be pretty good. The bullpen was its weak point last year. That should be pretty good. So I suppose if you're talking about just overall strength and depth, it would have to be the outfield. I mean, Nebraska can bring back its entire group in that regard if it wanted to, with Mojo Hagee, Joe Acker. I guess it lost Aaron Polinsky and Wright, but
Yeah, that's a big loss.
He's significant.
There's he was going to be an All-American. He's. I'm a big Aaron Polinsky believer.
No, yeah, he was. I mean, he was huge. There's no doubt about it. But they have Logan Foster who can come in.
Right.
Cam Chick, who was an All Big Ten type hitter for them the last couple of years, looks like he's dabbling in the outfield now. One kid I'm really impressed with is this Luke Sartori, who's a junior college transfer originally from Lincoln Southwest. Really toolsy guy. He's going to be one of the fastest players on the team. He hit well over 300 at the JUCO level last year. So they just have a lot of guys where you're just like, man, they need to find at bats for some of these players. And I don't feel like that's always been the case where it's been like, okay, you're 7, 8, 9 spots in the order. Who's it going to be today? I mean, that's been kind of a almost like a long running joke the last few years. It's like, who's it going to be? And you throw some guys out there and you hope it sticks. And they rarely have had lineup continuity top to bottom. And so I suppose outfield would be that spot this year, but just really impressed with the way they've added depth at all those spots.
Yeah. I think recruiting was an issue under Darren Erstad. We can say that now. Mike Anderson contributed a lot to why Nebraska baseball is where it is right now. And it's not his, you know, they had some bad seasons there that I think were in part because of him, but it wasn't because of recruiting. They had good players. Mike Anderson could recruit good players, and he did. Erstad was, I think, much better culture coach, but recruiting was definitely the issue. They didn't have enough good players. It feels like now they've got a little bit of both now. They've got a coach who can be, you know, can lean on the players when he has to. Simultaneously, they got a recruiting staff that's really motivated to go find players. The last College World Series that was played, obviously Michigan made it to the final, right? Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. The one thing that jumped out at me about Michigan is, and remember, Nebraska beat them 3 out of 5 that year, but the thing that jumped out at me about Michigan watching them play Creighton and then watching them in the World Series is I'm like, God dang, they've got pitcher after pitcher after pitcher after pitcher. Mm-hmm. Like, you just bring all kinds of guys in there, and they're all pretty good. That's what you got to do. You got to have depth. You got to have players. You got to be able to, because you're probably going to have a guy or two that's going to go down with an arm injury. Felt like when Nebraska had a guy go down under Erstad, that was a death blow or close to, oh God, we don't really have anything to replace that, you know, that kind of thing. And so hopefully they can get to a point where somebody gets hurt, and it's inevitable in baseball, especially with your pitchers. You know, you can do some of the things that you can still do some of the things that you think you can do at your best because you've got players behind them that are good. So that's good. Now, what happens with them now? Are they just kind of go into hibernation, or are they playing a couple? They, you know, what do they do now for a while?
Yeah, I mean, this was just the start of their fall practice. Like, it's unusual that they did what they did in televising or live streaming a scrimmage. Usually, it's pretty low key, and you can just kind of go watch if you want a little bit. And then the Red White series is in mid October. And I think that's still the case. So it's just, I thought kind of the high profile nature of what Nebraska did last week in terms of baseball was in part due to just people's starvation for Husker sports, right? That was the first kind of live Husker action you could get since mid-March, since things shut down. So yeah, they'll continue on. They'll evaluate players moving forward. It's different for the coaches this year because they actually know what they have. As opposed to a year ago, they were just a couple months in trying to figure out who was who and set cultural type things. And so, you know, they're going to be ahead in that regard. You know, pitchers won't pitch more than a handful of innings as they go through this fall. And otherwise, yeah, you're just trying to evaluate. This is where you tinker with things. Like I mentioned, Cam Chick in the outfield, different roles for different guys. And then, then you kind of shut it down until the spring, and I think the schedule will be interesting next spring too, Sam, because we don't really know what the budget situation for Nebraska is going to be like at that point. You know, 3 weeks ago, there had been this thought that, you know, Nebraska baseball might have to play everything regionally, not just for safety and traveling, but because they can't, the university right now, the athletic department can't afford to send them to Arizona to fly them there for a week or to fly them to San Diego or whatever it might be. And so I think that'll be fascinating too, to see how that plays out. And we usually get wind of that in October, maybe early November in a regular year. So it'll be fascinating to see how the finances play into that. But yeah, they're kind of just figuring some things out now, and then they'll shut it down until next February.
Well, Will's got some advantages in that he has connections with two of the best coaches in the SEC and two of the best programs in Arkansas and Texas A&M. And so I would think, now Nebraska's had a long history of playing Arkansas in recent years. Dave Van Horn's always been very good to Nebraska in that regard. How about three games in Kauffman? Nebraska, Arkansas, three-game series, Kauffman Stadium. Everybody, both teams drive halfway.
That'd be great. Let's get creative. Why not? That sounds great.
I mean, there's enough good teams in the Midwest, right? I mean, Missouri State's not bad. Wichita's pretty good. Okie State's not that far away.
I think the key, what's always been tough for Nebraska is the midweek games. You know, you can travel anywhere for a weekend and play three, but like it's very limited in who you can play on a one-off on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night. Like, you're going to get Creighton, you'll get UNO. Kansas State's always been one of those teams, Kansas. But beyond that, there just aren't a lot of
Anderson special, Northern Colorado.
Yeah. You could do that. You could do those two gamers. Honestly, I expect there to be fewer midweek games next year and have more weekend games. And maybe front load that in February and March. And so you can fill that. You'll probably still get your Creightons and your in-state matchups, but I would expect, they would load that up early on, probably still in some kind of drivable location. And then you get into the league play, of course, after that, but should be a much different Nebraska team next year. That's for sure.
Let's talk hoops. The NCAA announced last week that I think they want to start the season on November 25th. That doesn't necessarily mean anything for Nebraska. It does, but Nebraska wants to find out what the Big Ten wants to say and do as it relates to scheduling. So the Big Ten has to kind of decide, all right, here's when we're going to play. Here's how we're going to play. Do you want to use a bubble system where four teams kind of go to one locale and they all play each other? Or do you just want to kind of go home and away? They're willing to do that in football. The antigen testing hurdle in basketball is way different. You're talking about 15 guys at most. A lot of teams only have 12, 13. You can get that done. You can test those players. You can feel really good about the environment they're going to be in. Football is the hardest sport by far. So why can't you play an indoor basketball game at Pinnacle Bank Arena between two Big Ten teams? The question becomes the non-conference aspect. Are you comfortable with letting Big Ten teams court other non-conference games, however many that might be? There's a minimum number of games. There's a maximum. I think the maximum is 27, I think. Can't remember. So there's a kind of wait-and-see prospect with the Big Ten that I think Nebraska wants to see before they're saying too much about what they're going to do. I know there is a Myrtle Beach Invitational that is not probably going to be in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which is a shame because that is one of the better spots in America for anything. I think it's, according to John Rothstein from CBS Sports, that might be moved to the Orlando bubble in Disney. Originally, that tournament was scheduled for the weekend before Thanksgiving, so like the 20th and the 21st or something there. Now, with the season not beginning, I think, till the 25th, you're probably going to see that deal turn into moving it somewhere on Disney's campus where they can hold multiple tournaments at a time. They don't need they would be able to do a lot of basketball all at once on that particular campus. So you wouldn't just be the Myrtle Beach Invitational running at that time. They might be able to do something else. That's a really nice tournament for Nebraska. It's not the battle for Atlantis that Creighton is in that had that stacked lineup. But it's a good event. Like it's a quality event with let's see the teams here. Charlotte, Dayton, Loyola, Chicago, Missouri, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, and Utah State. Dayton obviously was the best of those teams last year. they obviously don't have their best player anymore. So, but that's a good list. And, you know, Nebraska can get three good games out of that. Maybe it's that and Creighton and maybe one other game. I know they got K-State down at the Sprint Center. Maybe that's something they can do. And then they go to the Big Ten Conference schedule, which in theory could be 18 games. And then you'd have 24 and you'd be good to go. So I think they're waiting to see what the Big Ten says about scheduling. The Big Ten wanted to get through football first. They've done that. I suspect the Big Ten will have a much more, what is the right word, sunny attitude as it relates to basketball. A, because you're dealing with fewer players, and B, because I just feel like most conference people and officials in every conference kind of like basketball more than they do football, except the SEC. you know, it's just that, it's just a feeling I get sometimes. Like, it's just, it feels easier to schedule and easier to manage because you're dealing with fewer players. So I think that's something to watch on the horizon, which may come this week. I mean, I think the Big Ten may kind of weigh in on that. That'll probably give some shape to Nebraska's season. I think the Myrtle Beach Invitational would be a good tournament. Hard. I mean, you're probably not getting an easy game in that deal. So if you're losing anything, you're losing your bye games that you were hoping were your wins, the easy wins. And, of course, last year nothing came easy in Nebraska. They lost to North Dakota State, for God's sakes. So, or North Dakota. So nothing came easy last year, but you're hoping that your bye games are your easier wins. So that won't be the case this year, I don't think. I think you'll probably lose some of those games. But anyway, Nebraska's waiting on that from the Big Ten. Carter Witt, who is a point guard, we'll say he's from Leesville Road High School in Raleigh. Now, he transferred in his senior year to an academy in New Hampshire, a prep academy, but he's not going to play there because he left. So he's not playing there. He was kind of thinking about whether he would be a 2020 or a 2021 prospect. And he kind of had to go through that in the spring. If he had been a 2020 prospect, he would have signed in the spring with a school, perhaps Nebraska. But he decided to kick it over to 2021 and was going to spend the final year at this prep academy, Brewster Academy, which is a well-known prep academy in New Hampshire. But he left there, and he's going to announce today, we're recording this on a Monday, where he's going to commit. So where is he going to commit? Well, there's a good chance he goes to Nebraska. Witt was a very, very good player in high school in North Carolina. Last year, he averaged 22.3 points, 9 rebounds, and 8.3 assists. He was a 6'3 guard. So the kid can play. He's a top 100 recruit, according to both Rivals and 247. If this kid were a football recruit, everybody would be falling on over him. And now in basketball, it's a little different because, of course, there's fewer players. So being in the top 100 is a little bit different than being in the top 100 in football. But getting this guy would be a big deal. Like Nebraska would, this would be a very nice feather in Nebraska's cap to land this kid. And he fits what Nebraska wants to do offensively. Nebraska runs what amounts to a spread, up-tempo attack only on a basketball court. They want to push the pace. They want to shoot threes. They want a distributor who can put it around the court, who's heady and smart and can, you know, make the right decisions, not take bad shots, all those things, which, you know, Cam Mack was probably 2 or 3 on those things. But, of course, Cam had issues off the court. And then Cam could make some plays on the court that if they turned out, they were beautiful. If they didn't, it made you kind of scratch your head a little bit. I think Carter Witt probably fits everything that Fred Hoiberg is looking for in a guard. And he's fairly big. He's, you know, apparently again 6'3". So that's a guy that Nebraska would love to pick up today. They already have one commit for the 2021 class, a three-point shooter from junior college, where Billy Gillespie is the coach. I think it's Ranger School, I think it's called. Billy Gillespie is the coach there. And if everybody knows that Billy Gillespie and Doc Sadler are extremely close friends. So Gillespie has reemerged at that school. So they have a very good three-point shooter from Japan. And he is committed to Nebraska's 2021 class. As for the roster, so the roster came out with some new, what do you want to call it? Sizes? You know how we do that all the time? We make and by the way, the commit's name is Kai Tominaga, the guard who's committed for 2021. They came out with some new sizes, so to speak, and this is a big team. Nebraska is a long team. They have among their scholarship players just one guy. Get this. Among their scholarship players, they have one guy shorter than 6'4", and that is Kobe Webster, who is likely to be the starting point guard this year. Outside of that, it goes 6'4". So let's see. They've got one guy that's 6'4". That's Trey McGowan's. This is among scholarship players. Akola Rope, 6'5". Elijah Wood, 6'5". Thor Squared is 6'6". Shamil Stevenson, 6'6". Teddy Allen, 6'6". Trevor Lake, 6'7". Derek Walker, 6'8". Delano Banton, Ivan Uidrago, and Lat Mayen, all 6'9". And Eduardo Andre is 6'10". Imagine what this looks like across the front line. Let's say that you're again, I think Kobe Webster is likely a key piece of this team, so he is the six-footer. But imagine what it would look like for Nebraska if Kobe Webster, Teddy Allen, Delano Banton, Lat Mayen, and Ivan Uidrago are across the front five. That's your starting five. That's a pretty good look. You don't have a seven-footer in there. You may have some, I don't know if you got a guy that's going to shut down Luka Garza at Iowa, but you've got quite a bit, I would say, in terms of length there. And you can close out on three-pointers. You can make life hard for teams outside the arc. And anybody who watched Nebraska basketball last year remembers that teams had epic performances against Nebraska from the three-point line. I mean epic at times. And some of that was because Nebraska was rolling Cam Mack and Gervais Green, smaller guys that just weren't maybe as long and couldn't close out quite as easily. And so as a result, teams were able to shoot over Nebraska with some ease last season. The hope is that this year that doesn't happen. And you don't run into that as much because you don't have Deshaun Burke. And now Burke was listed at 6'4". I don't know that he was. But you don't have Deshaun Burke, and your athletic profile got better too, in the sense that even though I think there's some things that Kevin Cross can do on a basketball court that are actually pretty impressive, and I think he's going to have a nice career at his new school, I think defensively Cross could be a liability at times, and I think you're going to get better there. So the length of this team, the size of this team is a little bit different. And then I think, and Fred Hoiberg said this on the radio 2-3 weeks ago, I believe the work ethic of this team, the chemistry, the internal chemistry, is different as well. So this is not necessarily a team of guys that are like, hey, we're at Nebraska. They should be happy we're here. We're going to work just as hard as we have to get out of practice and come back the next day to a group of guys who have something to prove. So I think that this is a very different group of players. To some degree, I think they feel much better about this group of players from a chemistry standpoint than they did last year.
And you talk about the length. I mean, that's going to be a new look for Nebraska. I think of all those Doc Sadler teams when guys were small, but it was about effort and it was about slowing down the game. And now you actually have some length across the front lines. And it allows you to do all these different things. Like you mentioned, the 3-point shooting. I mean, 3-point defense for Nebraska has been terrible for years.
Bad last year, certainly.
Yeah, and even a couple of years ago, I believe. Rebounding has never been a great strength, at least not in recent history for Nebraska. So if you're bringing in a different kind of looking kid, yeah, you're going to be able to do some different things, and it'll be fascinating to see. I mean, chemistry is a piece of it. The physical makeup of your team is a piece of it. If those two things can lock, yeah, I mean, it could be the kind of thing that flips things for Nebraska. I don't know, to what degree we're talking here, like middle of the pack in the Big Ten, but certainly an improvement on what we saw at the end of last season.
I think there can be improvement. I have to look more into, obviously with Chris Heddy leaving, I'm covering now basketball. I have to look more into the Big Ten teams that they're facing. That's a long research project that I'll have some time to do prior to the season beginning. So what I do know is that last season, teams were so confident about shooting the three-pointer, and this will tell you something. They felt so good about shooting threes that they shot more threes per game than Nebraska did. And that's telling you something about Nebraska's three-point defense. That opponents were very, very comfortable shooting three against them. And they shot 25 – opponents shot 25 three-pointers a game against Nebraska. That's not a small number, you know?
And what hurts them even more is that's their game. They're beating Nebraska at their own game, right? Look, like, it's not just taking advantage of a deficiency. It's then beating them in the way that Nebraska wants to beat teams.
That's right. That's right. Like, it's part of the challenge. By contrast, Nebraska's 22-11 team back in Miles second last year, and that was a good team. Didn't play a lot of great teams, but they, you know, that was a good team. That team only shot 597. Opponents only shot 597 three-pointers, 18 per game. So if there's anything that's got to get better, it's that three-point defense, because opponents made, I think, about 34% of their three-pointers against Nebraska last year, but they also took so many of them that they felt pretty comfortable, you know, taking them. And so I think Nebraska probably has to improve there most. That three-point defense has got to get better, because there were times when Nebraska could hang with a team for, you know, two and a half quarters. That's women's basketball, but a half and a half, so to speak, 1.5 of a game. And then, you know, there'd be that 10-minute stretch either in the first half or in the second half, often in the second half, when the game would just stretch out and the opponent would go on a 22-4 run and ball game. That was it. I mean, that was the whole game. So you could kind of tell Nebraska's system and Fred Hoiberg's system could keep them in it for a while. And then sooner or later, they'd start missing shots. Nebraska would, and the other team start hitting those three, and that was it. That was that. So they didn't have enough talent last year. I think that was part of the issue, is they didn't have enough players. I think this year they feel like they've got some better players. I think that the truth bears that out. Truth be told, they didn't have Teddy Allen last year, and Teddy Allen is probably a better player than everybody on Nebraska's 2019-2020 roster. So at the start, Teddy alone makes them a better team. And then I think Shamil Stevenson and Derek Walker and all those other pieces will help them too. So we'll see, though. There's a long ways to go for the basketball program in terms of what they know and when they're going to schedule and how they're going to – when they're going to start practice sometime in October. But there's – you know, it feels like the framework is getting there, and they'll figure it out. But I think they feel pretty good about where the team is at the moment, or as good as you one can feel given the circumstances of COVID-19. On the women's basketball front, I think it's pretty much the same thing, with one caveat. So Taylor Kissinger decided to retire from the sport. That's a loss for the women's basketball team. Big one. They're going to struggle to some degree to replace that three-point shooting and her scoring ability. She battled injuries really from high school on. Taylor's a tough kid and has long been that and just couldn't overcome the onslaught of injuries that she's had to deal with. And she's going to try to transition into a coaching role. Nebraska's done a really good job of recruiting for next year. They have a great 2021 class. It'll probably be a top 20 class nationally, maybe even better than that. But this year, they're just going to have to battle through it and try to play as good a defense as humanly possible, because they're going to have to hang their hat on defense. Because offensively, I think they're going to be a team that scores in the low 60s. I don't know where they're going to get all the scoring from this season. So they're going to have to play the rear ends off on defense. And I think they will play well. This will be Amy Williams, probably her best defensive team, but I think they're going to have to slow the pace a little bit and maybe have to alter to some degree some of the things they want to do, because if they don't have a great three-point shooter, and I'm not sure they do now that Kissinger's gone, it may be challenging for them at times to put points on the board. So we'll see. how they attack that. Hard to say. Hard to say how they're going to attack it. But that's the women's basketball story. And then I think everything else is moving to fall or moving to spring. So volleyball, I think, is moving to spring eventually. That'll get done. I think soccer is moving to spring. Hard to say how good they're going to be. They're very young. So that's going to be an adventure for them. So there's a lot of journeys here for Nebraska athletics still to take. But the football program is back. Football is back. And that's good news. Let's move on to our picks, shall we?
Do it.
All right. I'm 8-2. Evan is 6-4. I'm 8-2 on the strength of two NFL games. You picked the Lions and the Cowboys. I picked the Bears and the Rams. Only two NFL games this week, I think, starting and then we may not have any after that. We'll see. But we'll just have to see. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Texas at Texas Tech.
Texas.
I'll take Texas. I think it'll be a good game, though. Florida at Ole Miss. I'll take Florida.
Yeah, Florida.
Here's one. Iowa State at TCU. Now, TCU's broken in a new quarterback. I don't know who it is because I think Max Duggan is out because of the condition. So.
Right. Yeah, that'll be a good one. I'm still going TCU.
TCU for Evan. I'm going to take Iowa State. I think they're going to be a hell of a lot better. They'll have learned a lot of lessons. They played very poorly in their season opener. Soft. Listless. Like they had just gone through the coronavirus. We'll see. Here's another one. I like this one a lot. Army at Cincinnati. Hopefully this game gets played.
Give me Cincinnati. Good game, though.
Cincinnati, WKRP. Did you ever watch that show?
Just a couple episodes.
Yeah, great one. Great show. I was a child of the 80s, and that's when it was on what was it on? Oh, gosh. It was on syndication by then, and it was on syndication and then the network out of New York City that showed the Mets. I can't remember the name of the network, but it was on cable, like 1987. I can't even remember. There were a lot of Mets baseball games. There was a lot of baseball games in general on my father's television because baseball is his, like, true love. A lot of Braves, a lot of Mets, a lot of Cubs, a lot of Braves. We watched a lot of Braves games. I can tell you all about those teams in the 80s. All right. Louisville at Pittsburgh. Tricky one.
Yeah, that will be. Give me Louisville.
Okay. I think that's actually a pretty inspired pick. I'm going to take Pittsburgh. I don't like Louisville's defense, but I think Louisville's offense is pretty good.
Inspired pick, and then you go the other way. I like it.
It's a good pick, though, because I think everybody would say, oh, well, Pittsburgh, they're at home, they're ranked, Louisville's not. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a good game. West Virginia to Oklahoma State. Now, this is a question of how bad did Oklahoma State look. I say they looked crappy. I'm taking West Virginia.
Yeah, they looked really bad. Oklahoma State. I think they figure some things out, much like Iowa State might.
Maybe. Florida State at Miami.
Yeah, Miami looks really good. I'm taking the Hurricanes.
Miami. Tennessee at South Carolina. I'll take Tennessee in a, 17-14 kind of game. It'll be a good one.
I'll go South Carolina.
Yep. I have Tennessee ranked, so I guess I better put my money where my mouth is. Kentucky at Auburn. I'll take Auburn. I don't think Kentucky's good.
Same, Auburn.
And the last of the college games, Georgia Southern at Louisiana Lafayette. Louisiana Lafayette, 19th in the country. Okay. I'm going to take Georgia Southern.
Me too.
All right. NFL games. Two great ones next week. I mean, great ones. First one, Rams-Bills. Two 2-0 teams that have looked great doing it.
I'll take the Bills.
Bills for Evan. Rambonis for Sam. I'm taking the Rams. I love that offense. And here's the game of the week next week. The Chiefs at the Ravens. Oh, boy.
Mm.
Heavyweights. Heavyweights. What do you think of that?
It will be a great game. Chiefs. Give me the Chiefs.
I'm not picking against them either. They find a way in Baltimore against a very, very good team that has not really been tested yet. So, there we go. We've got some differences on the board for this week. Yeah. So, hey, Evan, it's good to see you. Good to talk to you. Let's see what this week holds for us. Hopefully we'll talk to Frost and some players and we get a sense of where their minds are at as they go into this deal. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be really, really interesting.
Can't wait to talk some football, man. You know, after the last month of politics and inner workings of conferences and all this, let's talk some football. Can't wait.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I totally agree with you. The one caveat, and it's going to be this way until they finish that first game, is we have to talk football in the context of playing Ohio State. And that's – so it's almost like you're talking on two separate tracks. You're talking on Nebraska's football season, and this is the hardest opener you've ever played. And Nebraska's football season, but in week one – you know, so like we have to be balanced and thoughtful about how we talk about this, because if we talk about Nebraska against Ohio State for a month, I think that's going to wear on everybody. I think you have to talk about Ohio State within the proper context of awesome team, only the first game. Your season will not, unless you intended on playing for the national title, your season is not defined by that game. Ohio State's season is defined by every game. Nebraska's season cannot be defined by what it does against Ohio State. And they, you never know. They might pull off a miracle win, but they can't define it that way. And so they can't spend a month saying we are only preparing to play. You know, we're going to put all of our eggs in this basket. You got to put more eggs in other baskets. And I think that's the thing Moose was probably frustrated with. And I get that. Like, you'd like to think about the season in the context of, hey, guys, let's move toward beating Illinois in week one. Or, hey, let's move toward beating Northwestern. We're going to Northwestern to kick off the season. Oh, we can beat, you know. Let's play our best. We're going to Ohio State. Like, it's just, let's play really well. We may lose by 14. Anyway, we'll see what happens. I feel for Nebraska in that regard. I think that's a tough draw to start the season, but so it goes. That's the hand that's dealt, and Nebraska has to deal with it. For Evan Bland, I'm Sam McEwen. Thanks for listening to the Pick Six podcast on a Monday. We may be back on Friday for about a half hour or so. Thanks a lot, Husker fans.